Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision Radio Show. Thank you for joining us. Today is February 8th, and I have to make a shout out to my sister Peggy. I know it's her birthday. She's probably not listening, but I still have to tell her happy birthday. And with us today, we have a friend of mine, someone I am grateful to call my friend, Heidi Lambert. I met her when we formed No Nukes Northwest. But Heidi, I know you are working with other organizations. Why don't you talk about that first?
Well, my work with
No Nukes. Thank you for my show. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, thanks for having me. I work with kids, and I do a lot of work with kids and teaching kids. And that work I do because of, I guess, growing up at Hanford, because I grew up around in a culture where opinions weren't really valued, and they just gave you information, and you were just supposed to recite it. You're supposed to memorize it and just repeat it and not really think about it and not really question it. And I had a father who was a nuclear scientist, and he got into nuclear science without really knowing what he was getting into. It was in the 70s, and it was really new, and it was a really good-paying job, and I had good social status, and so he took the job. And as he worked in it in the first, 5 to 6 years, he started to realize how dangerous it really was. Ooh. And he started asking himself, you know, what am I doing here? Why am I doing this? And I think those were really difficult questions, for one, because Hanford was top secret. So when you went to work there, you couldn't even go home and tell your wife and kids what you did there. So the whole society was very secret. It was very
trusting. Wow.
And it was very... The neighborhood, still to this day, there's lots of neighborhoods that don't have fences. You know, there's no privacy because, like, everyone's watching everyone. And so kind of this weird culture there. But at any rate, my dad, he had this good life, and he had his wife and his kids, and everything was perfect. And it was killing him that he was making weapons of mass destruction, and he didn't believe that that was a good thing. And so he went through a lot of conflict. I don't know if he ever really even got
How long did he work there? How long did he work there?
He worked at Hanford for 10 years.
Oh, my God.
In the 70s, it was really interesting. In 79, a bunch of paperwork that Hanford had wasn't protected anymore. Because you know that there's like 25 years that government documents can be kept and not public.
Yeah.
And so there was this huge lawsuits in the 70s, and of course I was little, so I don't really remember this, but from what I've read in the news was the people were demanding. At this point, so many people were dying on and around Hanford. People were demanding for this information.
Well, so then what they did was, yeah, go ahead.
Well, they did the three-party treaty, I think is what it's called. It's the agreement where they did like the Department of, I want to say environment, the EPA maybe was one part, the tribes is one part, and then the contractors running Hanford, like maybe DOE is that third part. And the whole idea was that these three agencies were going to work together on informing the people and coming up with a cleanup plan. All of a sudden, everything shifted from weapons to power in the 70s. And all of a sudden, there was no reason, even though we didn't need nukes, and there was this huge uprising throughout the whole world against nukes, rather than decommission, they came out with a new sales pitch that it was actually for energy and that we needed for power.
So I actually must interject. I'm sitting here. I have my thing on mute. I'm spitting nails.
Yeah, come on.
Because really, what they were selling was secrecy. That was the first rule, secrecy. Just like today, let's don't talk about it. And we've been living with alternative facts since the beginning of the nuclear industry. Alternative facts. Everybody's. So it is no wonder we now have a presidential advisor who says, oh, well, our alternative facts are just as good as your facts. And, you know, it's up to you to prove otherwise. It's exactly the same story. And I'm sorry that your dad had to work there for 10 years. What a horrible thing to have to work in conflict like that for 10 years.
Yeah, and honestly, Lenny, it kind of made him crazy. It really did. And that
he should have quit right away. So anybody working in a nuclear plant right now who might happen to be listening to this story, fuck everything and leave. It's like they're an abusive spouse. Get the fuck out right now.
It is very tricky too. I mean, Bechtel is it's not known as a nuke company. It's known as a construction company, but they do all the construction at nuclear plants.
Yes.
I had several neighbors when I lived in the Tri-Cities who came from the East Coast to work on the world's largest construction site and had no idea that that was over the world's largest nuclear waste site. So when you talk about alternative facts, that's probably the biggest alternative fact that they use is they just don't use the words. They don't even talk about what they're doing or where they're at. And it's very – that's the biggest secret. I mean, even when I lived in Tri-Cities, I said, you know, gosh, I was told that Hanford was closed. I was told that Hanford was on this cleanup. I'm like, I don't understand. I still see this huge reactor working. I see this huge plume. You know, what is going on? And it took me like months to find out that Hanford had leased a part of their property to CGS, which is Columbia Generating Station, to have their own reactor there.
So, only tell them how many miles away from Hanford. Tell them how many miles.
Well, it's in Hanford, but it's 15 miles, less than 15 miles from the gate.
Right. 1-5.
Yeah. So literally you go in through the gate. I mean, the gates, so there is a series of gates. But again, you know, when you're talking about nuclear science, what is a chain link fence, really? I mean,
There's a documentary about that. There's a great documentary. I think his name is Tony West, made this documentary called The Safe Side of the Fence about some people in St. Louis. They were literally told by Republic Services next to their burning dump, their nuclear dump site that was just covered with some plastic. They saw some workers out there in this headgear, radioactive, everything, the mask, everything, and gloves and big, thick boots. And they're sitting there on the other side of the fence having a picnic with their kids.
Yeah.
I mean, public services literally said, you're on the safe side of the fence. That's how the movie got started. That was the title. I don't know how it got started, but that was the title. And very clever because, man, is that a perfect picture of what these people do.
And that is the mentality. The mentality is that it's not safe on this side of the chain link fence, but it's safe on this side, even though the wind is blowing and the dust is hammering you. I mean, Eastern Washington is very, very windy.
The mentality is normalizing illness, normalizing genetic defects, normalizing early death, normalizing schizophrenia and insanity, normalizing diabetes. No, no. I mean, look, it's been imposed on us. We are going to live with it whether we like it or not. It's here, folks. But the insanity of it is, stop making it and start addressing it instead of like, oh, we've got to bury it under the ground. We need to figure out something better than just stuffing it back in. I mean, unless they can stuff it back in, you know, like a lot.
No, no,
like
no, Lonnie. I mean, that is what the efforts have been. I mean, first off, I want to say that nuclear science is unsolved. It is an unsolved dilemma. We know how to create that reaction, but we don't know anything else to do with those atoms after we do that.
Right.
And so we split these atoms, we create this reaction, and then we get left with all of this waste. The only solution they've come up with was, oh, we don't need reactors that are miles big. We can do these little SMRs that can fit in a trunk. But it's still the unsolved dilemma. It doesn't matter how big of a reactor you have. You're still going to be left with a content of altered atoms. Now, modern science keeps renaming those atoms. I don't know about if you've looked at the element chart lately.
Yeah.
But when I grew up, the element chart didn't have man-made elements. Now there's like 40 man-made elements that they're all radioactive elements.
And so, growing.
Yeah. So somehow by naming them, it somehow legitimizes them. No, we all got to make sure we understand the only thing we know what to do with these atoms is try to contain them and try to bury them. And they've done that for 50, 60 years in Hanford, and what a freaking mess. I mean, that's something I want to remind people, is that Hanford was the very first site that they created this waste. Now, they tested bombs down in the south, but this is where the bombs were made. This is where they were playing with this science. They were experimenting with it. And so when they first had waste, they just threw it out in the back in a trench. They didn't think that there was any, they thought, you know, it's just like garbage. They can just throw it away and the earth will just absorb it. Until they had a like 30-mile long trench open to the environment and birds were dying and things were dying, did they start to realize that they had to enclose that trench and actually bury it in tanks? And then they did that to learn that those tanks leaked. Then they went through to get double-shelled tanks that were supposed to last, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, and they lasted like 25. So we really, we can't, the problem is,
we still
the problem
use
is
those.
So big, we can't even, there's such an embarrassment that the nuke industry, they're making so much money making nuke science and lying these alternative facts that they don't want to come honest, because honestly, to decommission just the existing nuclear reactors that we have now in this world, it's going to take up to 100 years. And that's just to put dirt over top of it. Like, that's the only solution we have right now. It's just
well,
to
look,
try to...
I'm talking to a guy on the 23rd. His name is Shaziz. That's his acronym, I guess. But we were talking about nuclear. This is how I met him. I was on another radio show. And he was talking about how they do have technology to use that waste. We can turn it into energy. There's ways to make it, I believe. So I'm hoping that, you know, he's going to come on the show.
Yeah, it would be interesting.
Yeah, you're going to have to listen to it.
I've heard several scientists saying that that is the only solution, is to try to figure out how to reuse the waste. The only thing I've heard is safe storage methods, not reuse. And like a safe storage method would be the vitrification plants. We've put billions of dollars into a vitrification plant at Hanford. That actually is the biggest structure that's ever been built in the world. Vitrification was a process that they designed in France, because Germany and France went crazy with nukes and put all these reactors in. And then because their countries are so small, they had a lot of waste right away that they didn't have anywhere to put. And so they created a vitrification plant, which is where you take the waste through a plant with like different silicas and sands, and you turn the waste into a solid form. It's much like a glass.
Uh-huh, I've heard of that.
And then, right, and then the idea is that it's easier to store and ship because it's not a liquid waste, but it's still radioactive. So it's not that it's not radioactive. It's just in a solid state. When it's in a liquid state, is constantly searching for water and trying to meet with water. And so anytime nuclear waste comes into contact with water, it dilutes itself into that, say, river or drinking aquifer.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and so that's what's happened at Hanford, is that nuclear waste.
That's what's happened to all of our water on the entire planet then. They've been doing this 70 years. Let's don't delude ourselves. They bombed the crap out of the Pacific Ocean.
Right. Well, and this is the thing, is Hanford is on the Columbia River, which is one of the largest rivers in the U.S., and so that river is taking all of Hanford's waste to the ocean.
Wow.
Then we did the underwater bombing, and then, of course, we have Fukushima, which is just like an open valve since
it's coming at the other end. So we're getting bombarded on the West Coast from both ends. The whole entire West Coast.
The whole Pacific Ocean. The richest, most, you know, plentiful ocean.
It used to be richest ocean. It's not the richest ocean. And it's going to not be there. I mean, it's sad.
No, we totally have obliterated it.
But we are completely, this is the thing here. We are being led lambs to slaughter, and people still do nothing. And it's this whole secrecy of what happened to your dad, if you want your job. This is what got us talking about this topic, because you mentioned the imperative of keeping your mouth shut if you want to work at Hanford.
Yeah. Which we're seeing all over the federal government right now.
Right. Look at all the people when this, quote, Muslim ban went down. All those workers in the airports got quite militaristic with people. Immediately clicked their heels and said, Sieg Heil, Herr Trump. Okay, we'll put women. There was a story of a woman who was not given food for 23 hours and kept away from her two children for 23 hours, her two babies.
All over an executive order.
Well, this is the thing. If they wanted to conduct the executive order, they could do it. But they can be humane at the same time. If they can feel compelled to do it, just the fact that they're going to be humane will soften the blow. Part of the harshness of it all was the disrespect that people got.
Well, that goes to show how hateful people are.
Well, people are not. I'm going to object to that. People are not hateful. You know what? They're being trained to be silent and say, and it comes from the root of this. Our planet is under attack right now from Fukushima, and we're all pretending like we don't see. It's the secret silent. No Chernobyl. That's all gone bye-bye. That's okay. Don't worry about it. Hanford, let's don't talk about Hanford. And all the nuclear power plants are leaking.
Lonnie, look at the thing is what we're, so the scientists have been gagged. This is the ultimate in the gag, because in the 70s my dad would talk about scientists disappearing. My dad, like, that was how real it was. If you spoke out, you disappeared, right?
Well, then you know what, then they're gonna have to
fear.
Disappear.
That is a
and
fear
we need
for
to
your
stand
family.
Up. Yeah, but you know what? Where's the family? When people disappear, why do they fucking cower back down? Why don't they form a band and go, fuck you, you're not going to murder us? Because that's what it's getting down to. We have a military. If people are not completely aware what Trump represents, he represents and is the perfect bureaucratic authoritarian regime, Pinochet style, and he means it. And Mike Pence will be the enforcer, you guys. We haven't even seen these guys that they've set up in action. We're just fighting over who's going to play the game.
Well, as much as I agree with you about Trump, though, I have to say that I don't feel like this is new. I don't feel like this is the minute. I feel like this danger has existed since 1950. I mean, even through Obama, I mean, you have to understand, Obama came from Illinois. Illinois is the number one state for private nuclear reactors.
The day they decided to drop that bomb and they saw what they could do. They went crazy. I have this film called Half-Life. Fast and Ricklin we made a copy. We went and had it made. It's an old, old documentary. And we had a copy made. And it was... the people that have the rights, it's like free. It wasn't a legal thing to do. And I think that I can give it out to people, but it has pictures. It's old clips. It's some documentary that was done in like the 60s. And the guy said, you know, like he had pictures of the military and the generals that were doing it and the animals. If you look in their eyes, these guys were power crazed and they knew what they had done. And they knew that there was no back.
They still are. To me, we don't have like federal governments. This is an international thing. And
yes.
It's an international
yes.
government governed by the people who want nukes, because the nukes are such fast money for some people. I mean, the state payers, we're the ones who are paying for the nukes. And we pay people, it's really what the scam is you pay a construction company to build this facility. And so we pay millions and millions and millions of dollars to have this controlled, ultra secretive, multi-science, you know, center in our neighborhoods. And it's all because it's supposed to give us cheap electricity. We build these things. It takes 10, 15 years. It makes some jobs. People come in. Then when it comes to running it, it doesn't run very long before it starts breaking down. Then we have to pay to have people come in. And it's, again, it's the people who fix these facilities are plumbers. They're not... It's not like rocket scientists. I mean, it's plumbers. Plumbers. The most of Hanford is plumbing. You're talking about a lot of water, a lot of water that goes in and cools the fueling rods. And
then
all that water has to come out.
Well,
the nuclear scientist pushes the buttons in the facility, but when things break, they call a freaking plumber. It's a plumber. And plumbers... In, like, say, in Tri-Cities, most of these jobs are small businesses, and they make bids to go out and do the work at Hanford. And they take their truck with their hardware and their pipes and their things, and they drive out through the gate, and they go out.
Oh, my God.
And they fix the stuff, and then they drive out. When you see that they're decommissioning or cleaning up Hanford, again, those are plumbers going out there and pulling those pipes out. It's people, it's construction workers, it's road workers, it's people with, I can't think of what the names of all the heavy equipment is, but, you know, they bring their heavy equipment on the back of their trailer and they carve out the road to go out to the tank farm. I mean, we imagine it being really, like, controlled and safe,
yeah.
And it's just not. That's the biggest alternative fact there is about Hanford.
That's why there's all these catastrophes. That's why there's, and you know what though, I'm really beginning to grasp this, Heidi, why they allow this, because they recognize that we are all contaminated. It doesn't matter. Everyone's right. Contaminated. Our water's contaminated. Our air's contaminated. The food is contaminated. They don't test. If they, even if it's quote low level, Dr. Busby's proven that low level is still super bad.
Oh, yeah.
But instead of, see, we do have ways to remediate, though. It's not, we don't have to just give up and go, oh, well, that's it. We're all going to get cancer. They want us to, because they make money off of us getting cancer, not off of us staying healthy and eating right and growing our own vegetables.
It's totally true. It's totally true. Yep, it is about, and not only are we all contaminated.
I'm having a little come to Jesus moment here, man.
But it also genetically changes you, Lonnie. So, like, when I went to have children, I was really afraid. I was super afraid when I had my babies. I was afraid that something, you know, catastrophic could happen. And honestly, I did have miscarriages. And it was hard to have my kids. Luckily, they are healthy. But there's no promises that they won't get leukemia or child... I mean, child cancer is the number one killer of kids. And sadly,
or no guarantee that their children will be healthy either now.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That
I mean, that's what Dr. Caldicott says. Look, the first few generations are fine because the likelihood of maybe two babies who've been intermixed and had something going on, pretty small because not every child's affected, but it stays with the genes. So the more the people, you know, that's why it starts to show up at 4 to 8 generations, the likelihood of that chromosome repeating itself, that minute, tiny, microscopic, tiny one, 4 to 8 generations down the road is when you're going to see the worst of the defects. So this is their attitude. Like, look, we have seen birth defects in this country. Like, to be honest, I saw this Facebook posting with a guy playing this beautiful music with his feet. That's all he had. And it was awesome. It was really great that he found what had a full life. But I thought how sad it is that nobody's saying, why the heck did this, what happened to this person? Why did this, what's their community like? And you know
Well,
what
and
it
it
all goes
just
down
would.
to? Uranium mining. Let's just talk reality. Right here in Oregon, we have a uranium mine that is leaking like a sieve down into a gutter in a pool. What happens when it rains a lot and that thing overflows? It goes right
Right.
down the mountain.
Right.
And I venture
Yeah.
to say, if we did a look at what that, the drainage of where that goes and what area, those people that are first affected probably have a higher rate of effects from, I mean, the neglect,
Right.
this. So,
Right.
Heidi.
In a just world, those people would at least get some sort of compensation. But in reality, we're still making the poison. Like we're
Right.
not even stop. They're not even taking enough responsibility to stop what they're doing. I mean that's kind of where I'm at with nuclear science is, you know what? Okay, we've made this. Let's just stop. Let's just stop. Let's
That's what
stop
John
making
Goffin
them.
said.
Until if you start finding ways to recycle the waste, let's test it out. But let's fill it out. Like let's quit rushing into things. But there is so much of a race for fuel and power that there's no time
It's
to
a race for
stop.
money. It's money. It's the, like with Trump, like he just wants the power. He just wants the money. He just wants the whole enchilada. And by God, he's going to get it. Like he really, it's really sad, but this is exactly how Pinochet was installed. And unless people are willing to speak out and not speak out with violence, speak out with peace. Peace is the only answer. We cannot participate in violent anything because that does not work. They have more weapons. I read this story that said this month, the first month that Trump has been killed, more people have been killed in the United States by cops than at any other time. 105 people have been killed in the last month by cops since Trump was inaugurated.
Right. No,
That's a
we
lot
have
of
to be
people.
committed to nonviolence, and we have to support each other in nonviolence, and we need to be really creative. Like this is, I keep going back to Standing Rock and the DAPL movement going on because to me, they're showing us
They
different
are going to
ways.
get wiped out. You don't understand. Those
No,
soldiers are going
so.
to show up. Donald Trump and his friends, you guys do not understand bureaucratic
But
authoritarianism
this
yet,
is where, but
obviously.
Lonnie, this is bigger than that. This is bigger. And my proof of that is the divestment of Seattle. Seattle took their money from Wells Fargo. The people went to
Now,
city council and said,
yes.
we want to pull our millions. I want to say it was $3 billion, maybe $8 billion of city funds that they banked through Wells Fargo. And they took it. Yesterday, they voted unanimously to take it. Now that's the first city. Now we still have LA, we have Berkeley, we have Portland. I mean, this is going to keep happening. This isn't going to stop. So we can fight the way of protesting and being on the ground and being nose to nose with your oppressor, that time is over. New, the,
You know
this is this
what,
is where
though?
I'm
I
at with.
agree with you. That time is over, but not entirely, because guess what? While we're fighting and getting these cities to divest from the pipeline, they're going to build it anyways. They are going
Yeah,
to build it.
they
People
might,
are,
but we'll
they
take
are
down Wells.
already building it. The Army Corps of Engineers gave the nod, because guess what? They've been building it. They've been brute forcing it. And, thank God for the water protectors. I'm not saying I do not stand up for them. But the
No, I
point is, I
agree.
think people have grotesquely underestimated the power that these people who voted for Trump because they hated Clinton have no idea what they just installed. And we are about to see the full force of it. 105 people got killed by the cops in this country in 1 month.
Right. And they're
And
probably going to go and kill the protesters. But if they do kill the water protectors, then more people, this is
they're
the
going
thing, is
to
that.
arrest them. They're not going to kill them. They will arrest them, put them in jail, and say, thanks for being cheap 35 cents an hour labor
Yeah, I
for the
don't think that's
next
going to
20
happen.
years because you're all terrorists.
I think they can keep trying to arrest him, but I think it will get violent because the police force doesn't have any other methods. The government only knows violence, and
This is
nuclear
what I'm
weapons
thinking.
is. Pardon?
I agree with you. We can't go at them with violence, but what we can do is get masses of people 5 million people came out into the streets, and Trump had a freaking tizzy fit.
Right. But
Imagine
I'm
if we
saying
got
more
5 million
people,
people out into the streets again.
I'm hoping they all go to Standing Rock. You know, why stand in? Maybe we need to all go to the same place and stand together and support one another. And that's what I saw happening at Standing Rock last fall. And then the Army Corps of Engineers didn't pass the permit, so people went home for the winter. But now it's spring, and people, I know friends who are getting in their cars and driving to Standing Rock right now. I have friends who are at Standing Rock right now. I honestly think that that is like the center of the epicenter of what's happening right now. And they can continue forcing their way, but they're going to keep finding resistance. And that resistance is going to be peaceful resistance, and it's going to keep gaining in numbers. And again, if what I'm saying is that that is just symbolism. The people standing there is the symbolism. It's the actions of the divestment that is happening behind the scenes that's never happened before. And Wells Fargo is going to be crippled. It's going to be crippled. And the whole banking, that's all that supports this is money. So if we start changing the game about the money, I mean, I know you've heard this, Lonnie. For decades, we've been told shop locally. You know, don't spend your money on things you don't want. Use your money. You know, well, now that we're understanding that as a person, it doesn't make a very big difference, but as a community or a city, it can make a huge impact. And that's what we have to remember on the West Coast. Well, anywhere in the world, we have to remember if we organize and get ourselves together and resist, then it doesn't have to be violent. It's just simply not participating. And many of my friends, as far as the nuke industry goes, they don't participate in the industry. They go and they get solar panels and they get wind turbines and they take their houses off grid because they don't want to support the reactors. And people like Seattle, their money is going to pay for Hanford. And the more we inform them and tell them, hey, you're buying it, then they have that chance to divest. That's the thing, is that the whole time we've been lied to about where our money goes. It's been the secret, and we're starting to uncover that. And not only are we uncovering it, we're sharing it with each other. And so to me, this is huge. This is, they can keep pushing and they can keep forcing, but it's going to crumble. And those stupid, that pipeline, I'm sorry, is one of the stupidest ideas ever. And when I hear people say that it's for jobs, I wish they understood it's going to be like 23 people who run the pipeline. The
Right.
only jobs are building it. And it's just
That's
like the
right.
nuke plants. The only job is building it. After it's built, there are no jobs until it breaks, which it does break. And then you contract out some people to come fix it, you know, and clean it up. Honestly, that's the
Well, even
job
the
security.
number of jobs is like maximum 1,500 people. There's nothing compared to the
Nothing.
cost of the new, like in Illinois, they wanted to keep this nuclear plant open, and the two leaking nuclear power plants employed something like, I don't know, 1,500, 1,200 people. I calculated it was $83,000 per person per year to keep it open. That's just what it cost in their losses. But divide the employees up by the losses every year they were losing, like 83 years, $83,000 a year losing for every employee they kept on. They had
That's
like a
right.
$530,000 loss or something.
My dad used to compare the nuke industry to a barking dog. And he'd say, Heidi, it's so scary. It barks, it shows its teeth, it drools. And he said, but like any barking dog, you just approach him and you walk past him and you just keep looking forward. And as soon as you're passing, you know, you're beside him, they're quiet and they're calm. And then you walk on and you ask yourself, like, why did I avoid that barking dog?
I still think we need, I know a lot of people don't believe in the government, but you know what? It is the government that's paying the money to all this police state. And I think if these, like Chuck Grassley, for example, or Ted Cruz, or any of those people, if they thought they would lose their seat in the Senate, they would do what the people in their state wanted. They do whatever they want. That's why Betsy DeVos got voted in, even though the phones were off the hooks. They don't believe they're going to lose their Senate seats. They don't believe it. They
Well,
would
she paid for
think
it. She paid over $1 million.
they've paid to rig our elections. That's why they know they're not going to lose their Senate seats. They know we don't have fair elections. I mean, honestly, when it gets down to it, I mean, it is such an this is where we need to lean into this. Like, we need to demand, I don't know, if it's one of these conflicts. How do we deal with this out of control government? I mean, honestly, Heidi, it's the secrecy. I keep going back to the concept of everyone's expected to just keep the secret, and we're not going to talk about it. The alternative facts, you have your facts, we have ours. That's the way it goes. And if you want to be an American, you keep your trap shut.
Well, I was taught a different way, and I was taught to think things out. And so I was taught when people tell you that something's safe, you need to think about it and you need to understand it. And nukes never were convincing to me that they were safe. And I mean, I remember seeing people in hazmat suits. And I was just like, really? You think that's going to keep you safe? You know, it's like. So, like, as an American, we buy these false senses of security. I feel the same way about guns, Lonnie. I
Me
feel
too.
like people think we need these guns to save ourselves from our government. Well, all our government has to do is take a truck with nuclear waste in its trunk and park it outside your house, and you're gonna die in like 10 days. You know?
Right.
We don't. We're past guns. We're past that violence, and that's why I keep saying that. It's really a time that all of us need to trust our opinions, and I'll tell you, like, I'll go back to myself. So when I grew up, my dad had this great job, but when he finally chose to give his job up, which meant we lost our house and we lost a lot of things, and people didn't really understand what was going on, and the government said my dad was crazy. I grew up feeling like I grew up from crazy people, so I didn't really trust my opinions of my facts of what I knew. And I was a grown adult. I think I was near 30 years old when I met Mimi Gurman, who talked to me, and she said, God, I grew up on Three Mile Island, and can you believe this crap? You know, she's like, Hershey chocolate, they got the cheapest pasture in all the East Coast, and they filled, you know, the nuclear waste site up with cows, and we have Hershey's chocolate, and people buy it, and they're happy because we have cheap chocolate. And I said,
What?
oh my God, the school lunches, all the Dairy Gold, you know, dairy is grown outside of Hanford. And so we started talking about dairy, and then we started talking about
No
how
way.
calcium, you know, absorbs, or, you know, we absorb cesium instead of calcium, or strontium instead of calcium. And long story short, we ended up doing an action at Hanford, and Helen Caldicott came. And it was that moment that I met her and shook her hand, and she thanked me for having people come to Hanford, that I realized that I was validated, that my facts were real facts, and that their facts were the alternate. You know what I mean? At some point in our lives, the truth really does come out. And we either acknowledge that truth because we know it's true, or we deny it because of our paychecks and our lifestyle. And every person has those truths. It might be isn't even nuclear. It could be other. I mean, there's so many problems in our world right now, but they come to us we are in situations on a daily where we make decisions on what we believe in. And ultimately, I believe in kindness. And that's where I come back to. And the nuclear science is not kind. There's nothing nice about it. It's very competitive, and it's very money based. And so I grew up feeling, I don't know, I'm going to coin the words from 1984, with thought crimes. I grew up in a
Yeah.
household where we did thought crimes. We talked about situations and realities that weren't allowed to be talked about. And I remember my dad saying, like, do not tell people at school. Do not tell people. Do not tell that we talked about.
Wow.
And that's a reality we don't really understand anymore, because now, you know, to go forward 20, 30 years, now we have all this internet and these phones. And, you know, my dad could never Facebook. He was like, oh my God, do you realize if you put your opinions out there, you're going to be targeted? Like, you're going to get killed. My dad feared for my life because I said things that it was so ingrained in him that you never say. And so when you talk about secrecy, and you talk about an unhealthy house, and about a dysfunctional family, I mean, the first thing that you have to do is you have to go tell someone. You have to go trust someone and say, dude, I got beat last night, or this happened, or I didn't get fed, or you know what I mean? And that's the hardest part, is to find that voice inside of us and to really believe in our own reality. And that's something that people always say to me, oh, you have so much confidence. How come you have so much confidence? I don't have confidence. I just know what I've seen. I know what I know. So you can sit and tell me how safe it is, and you can tell me how cleaned up and contained it is, but I've lived there and I've seen it, and I can tell you it's not. And that, you either believe me or you don't, but you can go and find out yourself. That's what I welcome people. Go out there, embrace your dissent, embrace your opinions, question things, have thought crimes, think things that you think you shouldn't think, and let it be in that conversation with other people. And 9 out of 10 times in my experience, people will go, oh my God, Heidi, I thought that it was what was happening, but nobody told me, or I was so afraid about nuclear animals in my backyard, but everybody told me I was crazy. Or another one, I got stung by a bee and I had the worst reaction ever. I had to go to the hospital, but they told me it was because I was allergic to bees. And then you'd say, well, maybe it was a nuclear bee. Like, oh my God, I thought that, but I never said it out loud. You know, we have to start saying things out loud, even if it's kind of crazy, because it is crazy, and it's going to take really crazy solutions to fix this. And that's where I keep going back to this divestment. This divestment is brilliant. It's completely nonviolent. It's completely passive. It's behind the scenes. You don't even have to, your name doesn't even have to be on it. It's about your city. It's about your, where you live, your environment, and you getting together with your neighbors and you saying, hell no, we do not want this. Stop this. And that's what they're doing at Standing Rock. Those people, Standing Rock is someone's personal property. People right. own where those camps are.
Right.
There's no, this isn't public land. This is someone's
This isn't negotiable. Out. This isn't like, but you know what the government is doing is they're claiming, I'm sure, that domain, what's it called? Public domain. We can just take your house if we feel it's in the best interest of the public good.
Yeah. And so we.
And that's what they're doing. And that's why they're expediting it. That was the executive order, though. And the executive order was quite sneaky. It was more than just the oil, it was coal, it was nuclear. And it was like everything where they get to dig in our pockets, they're going to.
He could have made an executive order to shut down all the nuclear reactors. He could have done an executive order to cancel all student loans. I mean, he could have used his power in so many
Betsy
different
DeVos
ways.
Betsy DeVos owns a company that collects on student loans. He just hired her. He yes. hired the debt collector.
What I'm saying
the
is
Department
that
of
he
Education.
Lives. He lives in a reality full of illusions where he gets away with things because people don't question it. And that's what I'm saying. Those days are over. That's not going to happen in where we are. That's why I'm on
that's
the radio
true.
With you right
it
now, Lonnie.
It's not 1932. That is
it's
for
not.
Sure. It's not the same. Yeah. We're not going to watch our neighbors get loaded up on trains.
Yeah.
We're not going to
no.
go peacefully. This is not going to no. happen this way. And people, but you know what? This is my point here. You made a point quite well that it's really a lot of times it's just people doing it for the sake of their jobs. This means that those police officers, this is why Mimi Gurman did an action up at the Portland courthouse, and they were waiting to talk to the mayor about or getting into the city council because they're really intent on the city doing more for the homeless people during this horrendous winter that we're having. And they're basically ho-hum doing nothing. So she and her friend were talking to the police officer and he says, oh, well, I'm a friendly police officer. And she's like, really? And then they were kind of grilling him like, what was your actions and what did you do? And why then if you're a friendly police officer, why do you have to wear that mace and that gun, and why do you he's like, well, it's required. And well why don't you question that? Like, why do you feel like you can't question it? This is the issue. People feel like they can't question what they're told to do. Like when these people were given that executive order to put these people in jail at all costs, like they weren't, there was no accommodation, no treatment of these people as if they, many of the people, as if they were just, sorry, we're going, as if they were being accused of a crime.
Right.
And that this is the whole attitude of the militarized state, though. Like with the water protectors, they're being charged with felonies. That also is an outrageous misuse of that the police department, and it's not even just the police department, it's the Army Corps of Engineers, it's the government against the people.
Right. But
So.
I hope that they are their best selves, and I hope that they stay brave and courageous in their positions that they're in, and that they resist. I mean, that's the only
Yeah.
hope for our
Yeah.
government, is that
Yeah.
there are people in charge
Honorable
who are
men
making
and women.
decisions, men and
Yes.
women, who are bringing their best thoughts and their best actions to the table. And the simple question is this to hurt people or is this to heal? That's what they have to ask themselves. Are they hurting people or are they healing people? If they're hurting people, maybe they should resist. If they're healing people, then maybe they should persist. I mean, it goes
Yeah,
back
but
and
we're
forth.
dealing with people who believe that violence is a way to heal people. We're talking about Mike Pence, who wanted to put people in a what reconditioning class if you were gay, and put women who had an abortion in jail for 6 months.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, when you're talking about different realities here, Heidi, and I think, I mean,
I
I
think you're
love your
right. I think
optimism.
you
I
are
don't mean to
very
sound
right.
so skeptical. I'm recognizing that I'm sounding pretty hysterical and skeptical. But I am 61 and I'm looking at this guy like, seriously, people are underestimating the power of the violence if we do not get our elected officials on board with resistance. I
Right. And
mean,
hopefully we have a time, more time, you know, as quick as they have made decisions and changes, and as angry as I see the people. I mean, I know a ton of nonviolent protesters who are talking about punching Nazis. And the conversation came up like, okay, so if some dude just spews hate and he just stands on the corner and all he does is spew hate, do you have a right to go up and punch him in the face? Now,
no.
I'm committed to nonviolence, so I say no. You don't punch him
Yeah.
in the face. To
No.
me, you're resulting in the same methods of what put him
Violence
there.
begets violence. That's the
Yeah.
deal, ma'am. For
But
real. That's the.
you can get another soapbox and you can stand on it beside him and you can shout love each other. You know what I mean? There's creative ways of facing one another in disagreement. There's really creative ways, and art is one of them. Music is another. I mean, how did we get out of World War II? How did we get through the 70s? It was through creative minds and nonviolent commitment.
That's
And
right.
yes, you can say the wars have continued, the violence has continued, but you know, no one's Gandhi didn't say it's going to happen overnight. You know, MLK, he said this is going to be a lifelong fight. You know, you have to commit to it and stay with it. And I look at the government and I see what's happening right now, and I just think the collapse is inevitable. Like they're so, it's just like a man who's a narcissistic alcoholic. He's never going to be able to have a healthy, happy family. He could get married, he can have kids, but it's all about his image. It's all about himself. Eventually, that woman is going to pack up her kids and she's going to leave. And that's how I feel about Trump. Trump can sit here and he can do whatever he wants to do that's self-serving. It's going to help out a few people. Like there's several people who agree with what he's doing. Usually they're racist and they have their own problems, but the majority of us are going to walk out. And an example is February 17th. We're going to have a nationwide strike. We're asking everyone to not work, don't spend money, don't participate in our economy.
That's a
Like that's
Friday.
fighting
What
the
day is it?
27th.
February 17th?
Yeah, February
That's
17th is,
Friday.
yep, it's a national strike.
No work Friday. But you
Yep.
know,
And
who
try not
is
to use
we?
money because it's about the economy. Trump, that's his currency, is money. And that's what all of his decisions are made off of money and greed and who's going to make money. That's not sustainable. It's not sustainable. And there's so many of us that know that. And I guess this goes back to that question of those people who are working at the reactors who are making really good money and they have a retirement plan and they have the big fat house. They have to go to bed every night living with themselves. They have to know that Hanford could be the next Chernobyl or the next Fukushima. Hanford very easily could be Fukushima. This is the same.
It could be so far worse than Fukushima because
it would be. You're right. And it took, I mean, I remember 4 or 5 years ago when I started comparing Hanford to Fukushima, people were like, oh, it's not the same at all. Hanford
so much worse. If you even look into it.
No, you look into it, it's on way more fault lines. There's huge dams.
15 miles away from the Columbia Generating Station. If it had a blast, if there was a blast at Columbia Generating Station or an earthquake, and the Columbia Generating Station was fine, it withstood it, but then Hanford didn't, it would cause Columbia Generating Station to, the whole thing, and nobody could get into Hanford. We'd have a fire that would go on for, 700,000 years? I mean, I read that and my mouth fell open. They think that's the nuclear industry's estimate. And when they always report underestimates. So it would just be a hellhole forever. Bye-bye life on the planet.
Yeah, and bye-bye all that farmland, all the river, the fish, bye-bye all that. And that's all resting on that dude or the woman, whoever it is, who goes to bed at night, who sleeps well in their big fat house. And so that's where I'm at. My dad couldn't live with that. He consciously made a choice. He said to himself, I would rather be homeless with my family and be poor and crazy than be responsible for continuing on with this madness. How I was raised. But I'll tell you what, I went back to Hanford as an adult with children, and I needed to make a living. And I needed to find a job because I wanted to stay with my family. This was where I inherited. My family had lived there for generations, and I loved, it's beautiful, so I want to stay. So I looked everywhere for a job. The only places that were hiring for work was Hanford, and I couldn't get a job there. Now, I thought it was because I wasn't qualified. My dad would say, no, honey, it's because you're my kid. You've been blacklisted. You can't take it personal. You're really great at what you do. You can't take it personal. You need to move. As soon as you move, you'll get a job. And then, in all honesty, my mom died, and it was so heartbreaking for me, and it became realistic. Everyone was sick and dying. All of my friends, their children had birth defects, heart defects. And my husband said, I'm leaving. I want you to come with me, but if you don't, that's fine, but I'm leaving. And he left. And Lonnie, I didn't go with him. I really didn't. I was like, this is my family farm. This is where we put our root. This is mine, This is my piece of earth. And then it came to me. It was like, I've lost, it's contaminated. I've lost my loved ones. I'm trying to raise my children. My husband left me because he doesn't want to lose our children there. And so I did finally leave, but it was hard for me. So I can't even imagine a person who buys into it and believes all the bullshit they tell them.
So you wouldn't have left if your husband hadn't said you to leave. You would not have left.
Probably not. There was a part of me who believed that I was there. My background, I went to film school because there was still film when I went to college, but it was about media production. I was way into, media and how we express ourselves and spread our information. When I was in the Tri-Cities, there was no protesters. There was no dissent whatsoever. Everyone was agreeable. You could not have a conversation. If you said you didn't agree with it, then those people wouldn't come to your house again. That strong. And so part of me, I felt...
It is like the Stepford Wives. I swear to God, it looks like the Stepford Wives. When you drive through Richland and like, man, this is creepy. This looks like we've walked into where the Stepford Wives movie set was made.
Yeah. It was like that. And so for me, I felt like, I need to stay here and fight it. I need to be the person here who does oppose. And I want to be known as the person who doesn't buy it. But that wasn't the place for me to do that. It wasn't a safe place for me. And so now I do it away from there. But I still have lots of friends and family who live there. And I go visit there. And it's really... And it is frightening. The culture there is frightening. The high school mascot is an actual nuclear bomb. They're known as the Bombers, the Richland Bombers. And they're proud of it. They're proud. I mean, and that's the thing is there's a lot of ego and pride, and people saying they know better. And so it's been a long...
This is exactly how Trump Nation came to pass. People want to know how, and we have not even seen it begin. Wait till the veterans get so harmed. Wait till the EPA. Wait till we have, like, we just had a huge, gigantic spill. There's floods out on the North Dakota roads, out in South Dakota, North Dakota. There's huge floods, Wyoming. And people are just like, you know, wait till there's nobody going to come help them from the government. Then see what that's like. Ask the state for the money.
So, Lonnie, can I do a shameless plug right now?
Please do.
Okay. I'm asking the listeners, everyone out there, to please donate to nonukes.org. We need money. We need money to do actions because we are not going to stay still and we're not going to stay quiet.
Well, that's also true. And we also, you know, I am actually looking for donations to help bring Helen Caldicott, Bob Alvarez, and Donna Gilmore here to Eugene, Oregon. We just got notified that we were approved. Our panel was approved for the PELC, the Environmental Law Conference.
Yeah, so, that's amazing. I would love...
But Helen Caldicott's ticket from Australia is $6,000. So if anybody knows any big contributors, please have them give us a call. We'll put you in touch with her directly so you can just... You know what I'm saying? Like, or you can give it
you
to us.
You buy her ticket. You bring her
yes.
here. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
But we also need money for legal fees.
Yes.
And we also need money to bring kayakers. And so if anyone's listening to this and... has the means.
And when is the kayaking event happening?
You know, I don't know. I don't know when
that, like,
or where.
I think it's May, June.
I just know that this summer, we've had the last couple summers, we've had a lot of success with kayaktivists, and we want to continue with kayaktivists. And to do that, it takes, I mean, a lot of people come with their own kayaks and donate their time. But if they get in any legal trouble at all, nonukes.org really wants to help people with their legal fees
and
keep people safe. And so I hate to plug myself in here. But
well,
I just
please
really...
do plug. Please do. And you don't have to hate doing it because really it's true. What we're doing is the kayakers are coming in and stopping the nuclear submarines from going up and down the Columbia, the nuclear war weapons that come in and out,
the
whole arsenal is in...
Kayaktivists in the Puget Sound. I mean, it's a definite action that is working, and we need to support it the best way we can. And again, it goes back to that we're trying to be creative. This is a circus, and we're only going to win with the best tightrope walkers, you know? It's about changing the game and looking at it different. And I often look at the government and think of it as like a baby with a poopy diaper. And I'm not going to change its diaper until it quits pooping, you know?
Right, exactly.
But until then, I'm going to resist. And I'm going to keep telling people to not fund nuclear power and to fight.
Be creative in your resistance.
Yeah.
Well, Heidi, I want to thank you for joining me. We've got like 50 seconds left. Thank you for your inspiration, too, because as you can hear, I'm kind of like, I'm taking this quite grim, what's going on here. And so you're inspiring me to keep my thoughts up, my eyes to the sky, as Glenn Woodford would say. You know, I do have my courage feet on, but boy, man, I just feel like we need to lean into it. So you've been listening with Heidi Lambert of No Nukes Northwest and Lonnie Clark, Age of Fission Radio Show. Please take action. Lean into it. Make it matter in your own lives. Figure out a way to be creative, to resist. Put your courage feet on because we're going to need it. But, you know, thank you, Heidi, for being with us. It's been really awesome.
Thanks, Lonnie. And this is war, so we need to be creative.
I don't want to have war. We want to have peace. That's what this is about. Yeah.